Hello and welcome to No Directions 2017 Gen Con Seminar Coverage. Today's seminar, Starfinder Adventure Path Q&A. Special thanks to our Gen Con volunteers, Eric Brennan-Ives and Andrew Mullins. For more seminars and other great Pathfinder content, visit NoDirectionPodcast.com.
Door?
I don't know. Do we usually close the door?
Really?
Fair enough.
All right, well then we'll leave it open.
Hello!
Hi, everybody.
And welcome to the Starfinder Adventure Path Q&A seminar, right?
Everybody, all right.
So I am Robert G. McCrary, the Starfinder creative lead.
I'm Jason Keeley, developer, mainly working on Starfinder these days.
And we're here to talk about the Starfinder Adventure Path. So, this is all new. I can see one. I wanted to bring a copy, but I think we've already sold out of it today.
So I was just saying,
that's what it looks like.
I noticed some in the window of the Good Games shop outside the convention center, way down over there.
Okay.
So if you desperately need one here in Indy, go there.
So I guess we'll do a little bit. We'll talk about the first adventure path for Starfinder, which is Dead Sons, and then probably just open up questions in general about that kind of stuff. So I don't know, maybe first, like, how many people here are familiar with the Pathfinder adventure path? I've played it or run. Okay, so most of the people. So obviously, I mean, this is very similar. Our first one for Starfinder is called Dead Sons. The first volume is out this month, which is Incident at Absalom Station by me. Let me see, what else is there? So unlike the Pathfinder Adventure Path, which is every month, it's every other month currently for the Starfinder Adventure Path. So Volume 2 will be coming out in October and December and then on. So we're going to have Dead Sons is one adventure path, six parts over an entire year, is what we're looking forward to. It's also, the Pathfinder Adventure Path is 96 pages. The Starfinder Adventure Path is 64 pages. So it's a little shorter. We still have lots of back matter in there, but it means the adventures are a little shorter. Do you have anything you want to add to that?
No, that's all correct so far. I'm keeping track of what you've successfully said and what you've unsuccessfully said.
So one of the things that we're, some of the new stuff that we're doing in the Starfinder Adventure Path is, for now, certainly for Dead Sons, we're doing a new starship in every volume. So the core rulebook, I can't even talk now. Who's had a chance to look at the Starfinder core rulebook yet? All right, so a few of you. We have starships, obviously, in Starfinder, and there's starship combat. We have some sample starships in the core rulebook, but we wanted to kind of build out what kind of starships are available. So every volume of the Adventure Path has a new starship. It has both a stat block and a full map of that. That's on the inside cover. We have a little section called the Codex of Worlds, which is a new planet. It's basically a one-page write-up. So, again, in the core rulebook, we have a pretty significant settings chapter, and where we have a lot of planets, and this is just a way for us to continue building the setting by putting out more new planets.
And sometimes those planets will be thematically related to the adventure. Sometimes the adventure might even take place on that planet. But for the most part, they're just sort of new. What's interesting to us, whoever gets to write them.
Yeah, one of the things we wanted to do with the Adventure Path is make it both kind of as to appeal to as many people as possible. So even if you're not necessarily interested in like running the entire campaign with the back matter articles or other things such as the new starships or the Codex of Worlds, you can still use pieces of it in your game, even if you don't want to run the entire adventures as they're going. What's the other section we have in the
Alien Archive? Which is the bestiary section. That's, again, a sort of new monsters, aliens. Sometimes we'll take something that is a familiar Pathfinder and make it Starfinder, but other times we'll be creating whole new creatures from whole cloth. And there will be, every so often, racial traits so that the GM allows you can play this type of PC. Say, in the Codex of Worlds, we visit a new world, and it's got X type of people on it. Maybe that person, that alien, is in the alien archive in the back of the book, and also here's stats how to play that. That alien. But a lot of times it's what's going to be in the Alien Archive is going to be stuff in the adventure. At the moment, like as we're saying, sort of it's all sort of new, so we don't have our big bestiary book out yet, our Alien Archive, the big hardcover. So we're having to, at the beginning here, sort of start with stuff that's in the back of the Alien Archive, stuff that was in the Free RPG Day product, and build up sort of a good base of creatures that can be in the adventures.
I should also, I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
I should also point out at the beginning, because we're talking about the adventure path, there probably will be some spoilers in this. So if you really, if you're like a player and you don't want any spoilers, this might not be the best seminar for you. We'll try not to go too much into things, but based on like the Pathfinder panels that we do, usually some things, although we have a lot more adventure paths to talk about in Pathfinder than we do with Starfinder. So that's kind of the general format. We've got the adventure, we've got the new starship, we've got the Codex of Worlds, we've got the Alien Archives, and then we have some additional articles to help build Starfinder as well. And those are kind of changed by each issue or each volume of the adventure path. In the first one, Incident at Absalom Station, we have a big gazetteer of Absalom Station. That's kind of... And some of this stuff, if you all have been following the news, you may know a lot of this stuff. I don't know how many people have followed, so I may be saying some pretty basic stuff. But if you haven't heard it, this will all be new. So, Galarian in Starfinder, we kind of have to go in like from the beginning.
Do we have to go? Okay.
Well, not all the way from the beginning. But...
Well, long, long time ago in a galaxy.
Close by.
Close by.
So in Starfinder, Galarian is no longer where it used to be in Starfinder. Galarian has been moved. And no one knows quite where it is. The gods are assuring everyone that everything's okay, but there's this whole period of history called the Gap that has just been erased from the universe, whether it's memories or history books. And sometime during that period, Galarian went somewhere else. In its place in the Starfinder universe is a huge space station called Absalom Station. And that's kind of the center of... all the different planets have joined together in something called the Absalom Pact, named after Absalom Station, which, for those of you familiar with Pathfinder, is named after the city of Absalom. So that's kind of the center of the Starfinder setting, of the Pact Worlds, the Planara, or the Pact Council. Planara is where they meet, right?
Yeah, that's the building.
The Pact Council, which is where all the representatives from the Pact Worlds meet on Absalom Station. So we've got a big article on Absalom Station in this first one, because it's called Incident at Absalom Station, so you kind of want to know a little bit more about Absalom Station.
All the places where you're not killing people in. So you can go to, check out the spire or the post.
Yeah, so it's basically, so like again, if you're not interested in necessarily running the adventure, you've got a big thing to kind of detail one of the core parts of the setting. We also have a smaller section in number one called Relics of Galarian, and these are some items, magic items, technology, and other things that have sort of transitioned from the past up to now. So there's things like, if you're familiar with the Red Mantis Assassins, this article has Starfinder stats for the Red Mantis Helm, which has become like a thing that people wear that is they used to have on Galarian that now you can get in Starfinder as well. So that's pretty much the... Well, we haven't even talked about the plot at all, but...
No.
I don't know.
No. Want to go into that? Do you want the inciting incident at Absalom Station, so to speak?
Yeah, so the incident at Absalom Station in the title is a ship appears out of the drift. That is, the drift is sort of the hyperspace plane, towing an asteroid behind it, but there's nobody on the ship. So everyone's really wondering, what is this asteroid? What is with this ship? The PCs are newly arrived on Absalom Station. They get involved in some local politics with some of the street gangs, and then sort of a neutral third party asks them to investigate this derelict ship and the asteroid that it's towing behind them. And that's pretty much the...
how it begins.
That's how it all begins. And by the end of it, because Starfinder does assume that... or the kind of the base assumption is that everyone's playing the members of a starship crew, the PCs don't start with the starship at the beginning of the adventure, but by the end of the adventure, they will have a starship. So that's kind of one of the big things is, all right, this is where the PCs get their first ship, is in the first adventure. So that's kind of the general overview of number one. Number two, I don't want to keep talking, but...
Do you want me to...
Remember? Yeah, show you.
Give me your cheat sheet.
You know some of this stuff.
Number two is Temple of the Twelve. That was written by Pathfinder Society favorite John Compton. Or maybe you dislike him because he's nerfed all your cool builds. That takes the PCs out to... without giving away too much what happens in the first one, the PCs are still on adventures. And they've got to look up information, so they go to this temple university kind of situation on Castrovel, which is our big jungle planet. And they have to go through a jungle-type expedition to get to this area because starships aren't allowed to fly over this continent. And they get the information they need, and they find out, God, how do you do this without telling them what it is?
Yeah, well...
That's the question.
Well, who are they going up against in this?
Oh, it's okay. So yeah, some of the main antagonists in this part and in the adventure path are going to be the Cult of the Devourer, and the Devourer is sort of an evil, gross, god-like thing that has a cult of crazy people who worship it and want to destroy. I think it was a sort of entropy-loving group that's like, yeah, let's kill everything. So
the Devourer is one of the new gods for Starfinder, and it's all about supernovas and black holes and basically just the end of the universe in general. So there's a big cult associated with him.
And they might be looking for something that will help them, so you want to stop them from getting it by getting to it first, but... No, we'll see. And then also you're going to hit a lot of with the Corpse Fleet, which is, so there's the Planet of Eox in the Pact World, which is...
That's the next one.
Yeah, but this, I'm just talking about it in general. Just talking about the general baddies of the group, of the whole AP. Eox is a planet where they had a catastrophe, so most of the people have to kind of turn to undeath to survive, and that was millennia ago. And at this point, they're not fully... evil. They were like the first to sign the Absalom Pact, so they're just sort of, they're playing along. But when they did that, there were a bunch of their navy was like, no, the living, they're terrible. They're weak. We can't ally with them. And they broke off, and they became what's known as the Corpse Fleet, and they're all about just killing everything that is alive. They're not necessarily for the entire heat death of the universe, because they live in it. That's where they keep all their stuff. And so they're just out for killing the dead people. They're killing the living people, making them dead. And so in the book two, we also get another big, nice gazetteer of Castrovel. And in that one, there's more about the Cult of the Devourer, some gear that the Cult of the Devourer might have that your PCs might be able to get, some other sort of game options for PCs there.
Yep, new spells, and there's also there'll also be a new mystic connection. So mystics are one of the classes. If you looked at the core rulebook, they have a number of connections. That's kind of the thing that customizes your mystic. So there's a new one that's basically for the... It's called the Devastator, and it's very much... done to the Devourer. So you can still play it, but because they're not completely tied to gods, but usually it's bad people that have this thing. But GMs or players could use that.
Yeah. Well, we go back and forth, so I can talk about number four.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, so we have after this one, the third one is called Splintered Worlds. This is written by Amanda Hammond Coons, who is our development coordinator. She worked a lot on Starfinder as well. This one is still the PCs kind of tracking down the same information, but now they're going up. They're going to the Diaspora, which is the asteroid belt in the solar system, still looking for the Cult of the Devourer, but then they also learn that this Corpse Fleet that Jason mentioned is getting involved. So they go to Eox, the planet of the dead, where they have to deal with all the fun Eox stuff. It's an interesting thing of part of the world, because there is a planet full of undead creatures who are citizens of the Pact Worlds. So it's not quite as easy as undead equal bad. A lot of them are, but some of them are just people that have jobs and just want to make an unliving and, bring home their paycheck every week. So and the PCs will get to meet some of those. They'll also get to meet some bad guys in this one as well. And so, again, just like we've been doing in the other ones, we have a gazetteer of the planet of Eox to give you a little more information. There's only so much that we could, fit in the core rulebook. We also have a new type of augmentations. So in the core rulebook, we have cybernetics, we have biotech. Now we are introducing necrotech, which is just what it sounds like. You want to stick a ghoul arm on yourself? Well, guess what? You can. Or put in a vampire's heart inside you, basically. You can do that too, if your GM allows it, I guess. And then we have an article on the Corpse Fleet as well, because this is one of the other big villains for the AP. So we're talking about them. We have some new starships for them to use, and some new necrotech, which is the armor and weapons that they use, because they're a pretty... So again, these are all things that can be used separate from the AP as well. Mm-hmm.
And moving on to number four is the Ruined Clouds, and I wrote that one, so I'm going to talk about it. Basically, at this point, we've stayed in the Pact World getting information, and now the PCs figure out something. They need to go to a planet, an uncharted planet, an unexplored planet, out in the vast, which is just basically as far away you can get as get from the Pact Worlds with us still being within the same galaxy. So they go there, kind of like hot on the trail of the Cult of the Devourer, and they get there and they find a sort of the floating gas giant, and they find the remains of this city. that is ancient, and it is inhabited by the sort of degenerate descendants of the high-tech people who used to live there. So you've got this sort of modern-esque city, but the people living in it are using bows and hunting with dogs, and they're not dogs, but dog-like aliens and that sort of thing, and don't quite understand the technology or how to use it or what these buildings are. So they, basically are like, oh, that museum, they call it like the Maze of Ghosts, because it's all holograms. They don't quite understand what holograms are. They think they're ghosts. So they're essentially worshiping their ancestors a lot, but they don't fully get what happened. So the PCs have to deal with them. There's a sort of two factions there, and once they've sort of appeased the one faction, they're able to get into this area, which has the information that they need. Finding out that the Corpse Fleet has already been there and sort of caused a ruckus and has jetted out. So there's sort of tensions there against outsiders when the PCs first arrive. And this whole this volume includes a full gazetteer of that city. Which has a lot more locations on it that we could get to in the adventure, as well as aliens in the back that are sort of semi-native to this ruined city. And there also, in that particular volume, includes an article on the Drift, sort of more detailed what can be found there, how it works, how to do the random encounters, and also a short, I don't know how short it is, but a gazetteer on Alluvion, which is called the city at the center of the Drift, and that is Triune, who's a new god, for Starfinder, who is the one who gave the technology of the Drift to the people at large. That's where this god lives, and you can't just go there. You kind of need to be let in there, but this sort of lets you know what it's like when it's there, when you're there. Yeah, the end.
All right, number five is called The 13th Gate, and this is by Stephen Radney McFarland. Now we're getting a little bit more spoiler territory, because now the PCs have reached this big alien megastructure, this ancient alien megastructure that kind of everyone is going for. And this is kind of like the key to this, to a demiplane that holds this ancient alien artifact, basically, and everyone's trying to get to it. So it's called the Gate of 12 Suns. That's why we have the 13th Gate, because that's what... Yeah, and a big alien megastructure way out somewhere in the universe where no one's been before. The PCs kind of basically have to take control of this thing from the Corpse Fleet, not the Corpse Fleet, sorry, the Cult of Devourer, who's still trying to get a hold of this. And but before they do, and it's hard to say exactly what is happening in this one, but beyond that at this point, but... alien megastructure, kind of little new planets that they get to go around about. And this one, the back matter we have is a big article just on alien worlds and culture. So it's going to go a little bit more in depth than the Codex of Worlds that we do, where we're just going to create some new alien cultures. We want to give a little bit about their world, a little bit about their culture, and then also stats for them in the alien archive portion of that. So that's just going to be just developing some of these more farther afield alien cultures that you can use in your games.
And our final volume is Empire of Bones, and that's going to be by Owen Casey Stevens. And this is obviously the climax. And during this particular climax, the PCs have essentially had to infiltrate a ship called the Empire of Bones, which you can clearly guess is a Corpse Fleet. What's it called? Like a
flagship.
Flagship, thank you. Shall we say exactly what they're going to do with it? Spoilers. No, so you got to infiltrate it and do something to win the adventure. And basically sort of make sure that no one gets this ancient alien tech, which is an ancient alien super weapon.
Yeah.
And make sure that basically keep the universe safe from it. We're going to do more on the ships of the Corpse Fleet, sort of give you some information on how to run sort of maybe like giant mega ships in the Starship Combat stuff. And of course, as always, the last volume we do, a continuing the campaign. What do you want to do? Maybe, what if the PCs lose? Who gets them super weapon, or what else they can do if they can maybe stick it to the Corpse Fleet general or something, their admiral, the undying admiral.
Yeah. Things are a little bit hazier towards the end of the adventure path, because since this adventure path is stretching over a whole year, we actually haven't, and the game's just coming out now, we haven't actually finished all this stuff, so it's the plans. But you can also get, if you take a look at the first volume, there is a campaign outline that kind of goes and gives you sort of these broad strokes of what the adventures are about as well. But that is sort of our brief overview of the Dead Suns adventure path. So I guess now, do you have anything to add to that?
No, it's going to be great.
Yes. So, but we can take questions about Dead Sons, about the Starfinder Adventure Path. We should try to keep, we can answer some about Starfinder in general, but we do have some other Starfinder panels, so we don't want it to be, we don't want to focus too much on the game itself, because we have, I think tomorrow is the Starfinder Q&As and stuff. Yeah. So, I think you had your hand up here.
Just real quick, is this similar in progression in terms of levels as the standard Pathfinder?
It is not because because it's a little bit shorter. So the Dead Sons is going to go to 12th or 13th level. As we go forward and do more adventure paths, we may get a little bit experimental in terms of how many volumes or what level it even starts at. But for right now, we're starting at first. We'll probably still do that for the first few adventure paths. And but it'll probably get you to about 12th or 13th. Any more questions? Back.
In terms of balance between having normal PC combat and starship combat, how is that kind of looking in the adventure path? Is it something where later on there's more starship combat, or is it kind of balanced?
We're trying to balance it out as I mean, Starfinder is primarily a game about characters, right? And starship combat is a part of that. So one of my goals is I want, because they're playing the crew of a starship, they get a ship in the first adventure, I want them to use their starship in every adventure. Most of the adventures will be more focused on the characters with a little bit of starship combat. Some of the ones later, there may be a little more starship combat, but not as much. It's not going to be like all starship combat and one regular combat. It won't be like that.
Yeah.
Are there any more questions?
I believe I heard in one of the interviews that there weren't going to be like player companions and campaign setting books, and that was just all going to be in the AP books. Is that still?
That is the plan right now. So that's why with all the back matter articles, we're trying to put stuff that's usable to a wider variety of people. In the Pathfinder Adventure Path, we may have an article that is only good for GMs and just is like some and. We still have that, but we always want to put some kind of rules element that players can use as well. So that's why we're talking about like, oh, here's the Eox Gazetteer. Well, we introduce these new rules for undead augmentations if you want to bring those into your campaign. So hopefully, because we don't have plans right now for any kind of companion or campaign setting, that's all going to be coming out in the adventure path.
So, I mean, given that you have that much information you need to put into every bit of every book, why are you why are they shorter?
Because when we first, the real answer is when we first started putting Starfinder, we had no idea it was going to be this popular. And so, and we couldn't, you know, we're still producing Pathfinder. So we had limited stuff. So I think the idea was sort of be conservative and see how it goes. I can't say that our current plan is going to stay that way. It's just going to see basically how it takes off. I mean, this is literally the first day it's been on sale. So,
especially given how you're not going to have.
Right. And part of it is, I mean, we're not a huge company, and so we're still doing Pathfinder. I think it's going to depend on, you know, how people receive the game and how much they play it. And if we start getting a lot of feedback, we may start shifting more resources toward that. But
we do have plans to possibly to, when I was to say this, because this should have been up on the website by now.
Is it?
I think it should have been. But anyway, we have plans to release other, like, hardcover books that will help flesh out the world or do more player stuff. But those are going to come, you know, maybe once a year, right? So, and they will also be shorter than, you know, your normal Ultimate Intrigue or whatever, that Ultimate Wilderness and that sort of thing. Because, again, you know, we have limited resources. The Starfinder, we're not 100% segmented off from the rest of the Pathfinder team, but, you know, 99% basically, right? So, yeah, so and in that sense, we sort of have shifted over to focus on Starfinder. There's sort of less people to work on Pathfinder, so we're working on trying to basically get a good balance between the two so we can still give you all this Pathfinder stuff that everyone loves while still giving you enough Starfinder stuff to keep it alive.
More questions? Yeah.
Can you play test enough to know where the first place where the most likely to die is?
Just in the first adventure, I haven't had anybody die yet in the first adventure, but that doesn't mean that it couldn't happen. I mean, it's kind of, I would think kind of toward the end, there's a pretty kind of the boss monster of the adventure can be pretty scary. So that could be, but I mean, you know, things can go unluckily at any point. So it's possible someone could die in the first encounter, but probably not, because Starfinder characters are able to soak up a little more damage than Pathfinder characters. Yeah.
Of just
the adventure. I have one of the things we have with our adventure pass is the author is usually responsible for playtesting because of our production schedule and everything. So I have run maybe just two playtests of the first adventure. And then I also ran it at PaizoCon this past year, or a portion of it for a group.
Yeah.
Two groups, in fact, yes.
Rinda, you're allowed to play the adventure pass with Starfinder Society.
Well, they much as the way they had done it for the Pathfinder Adventure Fest, for Pathfinder Society, they'll be sanctioning, and I don't know if Thirsty got the sanctioning ready for the first volume yet, but if not yet, very, very soon. Basically what that is, you'll play it, and there will be a document that lets you know, as Starfinder Society, do A, B, and C, and instead of giving out X, you don't need to give out the XP, obviously, you just get how many credits you get for playing it, basically, in terms of that. So it's essentially the same as for Pathfinder. Which, if you don't know what it is, it's basically what I just said.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the society play is sort of a separate team. So we'll get done with the adventure path, and then they will look at it and say, well, how do we need to modify this to play in society, and then produce that document. So
because there's a difference, because the adventure path is sort of built to be played with four players, whereas Pathfinder Society is sort of built to be played around with six players. So I don't know exactly how they decide to say, oh, put another monster here, or give it 10 more hit points. But they always do a great job of figuring out what they need to do that. And you just have to find a Starfinder Society approved GM to run it for you.
Any more questions? Yep.
Are there any discussions or theoretical out there sort of ideas about adventure paths involving like crossovers between Pathfinder and Starfinder as far as like characters that move from one to the other?
At this point, no, because we really want to keep the two of them separate. That's one of the reasons for the gap in Galarian being missing, is so that people who are playing Pathfinder don't have to worry about any effects running over into Starfinder and vice versa. And it's also, we haven't said exactly how far into the future it is. So while we do have some gods and organizations that you might recognize from Pathfinder that are still present in Starfinder, the chances of people being the same, I mean, there are some immortal type undead creatures, but at this point we don't have any big plans for that, because we want to tell our own stories, and we still have, I mean, Pathfinder's still around, right? So yeah. Pathfinder can still tell the Pathfinder stories. We want to tell new Starfinder stories with all of the new Starfinder toys.
And the sort of different kind of themes you can get with Starfinder that you can't quite do with Pathfinder, like talking about transhumanism and that sort of thing. And so we're going to maybe dip into stuff like that when in the future.
Of course, in your game, you can do whatever you want. I mean, if you want to bring stuff in from Pathfinder, you're more than welcome to. And I mean, we picked some things. I mean, a couple of the big things, we have the goddess Iomide. She's and some other gods too have moved forward into Starfinder. There's an organization called the Knights of Galarian, which is a knighthood dedicated to Iomide that is in the future. The Hell Knights are in Starfinder as well. They just have big starships now that are citadels and stuff. So you have Hell Knights, but not like the same Hell Knights that were in Pathfinder.
Can you spoil all the planets that the adventure path goes through? And is there any plane shifting involved during any of the adventure?
So it starts on Absalom Station.
Yep.
It goes to Castrovel, and then to Eox.
And the Diaspora.
And the Diaspora, and Eox. That's technically four. I mean, both Absalom Station and the Diaspora are not planets, but they're they might as well be. Then it goes to Negior, which
Negior 6, which is a new planet that has this gas giant where an ancient alien civilization had basically had a colony on, and this is the colony that you're a colony that you're talking to the degenerate.
So that's the first real alien world.
Yeah.
And then the Gate of 12 Suns is actually a couple of... I mean, there's 12 suns. It's literally the Gate of 12 Suns. So there's a few worlds around there.
I think you're calling them controller moons?
Yeah, well, they're technically not moons because they're around suns. So they're probably actually worlds.
Controller worlds.
Planets or something. I don't know.
That's fair.
And in terms of plane shifting, there's not... Well, drift travel involves going to another plane because the drift is a plane, but... One of the things about the drift is you can't get there by magic. You can only get there through technology. So you can't cast plane shift and go to the drift. You have to have a ship with a drift engine, and that takes you to the drift. So in that sense, there is plane shifting, and there is a sort of demi-plane at the end, which you'll probably go into. But again, that plane shifting, you're going to open up a gate and go in there. So, but not a bunch of like planar travel.
Yeah, we were not, like, not necessarily going to see hell or Abaddon or heaven or anything like that, any of the big ones.
I would say not see, not even necessarily. You wouldn't,
yeah, not even. Yeah. Yeah,
at least in this adventure path. All those planes still exist, you know. But any more? Yeah.
Does the adventure path work in any downtime?
Do you want to address that?
Well, we have... So drift travel can take days, essentially, right? So once you... especially if you're going to someplace very far away. In terms of, like, if you're doing drift travel from Absalom Station to Eox, that may just take a couple days. But going from any of those places out to Nedjor 6, one of these, out in the vast, that'll take, like, 5 to 6 days. So, in that sort of sense, there is that sort of downtime where if your character has put... And here's the great thing, you don't have to have... item creation feats to be able to create items. If you've got some engineer ranks or some mysticism ranks, you could spend that time making things. And in terms of, we haven't like necessarily built in, this part three happens here, and then a month later part four happens. Obviously, the PCs are probably going to want to be hot on the trail of who they're chasing. But there's this built-in travel time, and when you're on a starship, it's not like being in a wagon traveling across the country where you're bumpy and whatnot. You're on a starship. It's basically like, it could be this room. We could be on a starship right now. We're on the starship Earth, as a matter of fact. That'll blew your mind. And so you'll most likely have your own quarters and whatnot, and so you'll be able to do those sort of things if you need to.
Yeah, so nothing's hard-coded in there. I mean, like he said, there is kind of this time limit because you're chasing these other two groups, but it's not a set time limit. That's more of a story time limit. So GMs can kind of adjust that as they want, or there's plenty of opportunities where you can, as a GM, where you can expand stuff to beyond the adventure. If you want to say, oh, we'll spend another week on Castrovel doing a little side adventure, there is room for that in there. We just don't really hard-code it into the adventure path.
Speaking of time, roughly how long does it?
Yeah, it's hard to say because so many groups play at different rates, and it depends on how I had a couple people ask me that today down in the booth, and it's like, you know, it could be anywhere from 2 to 6 hours, or actually, I was saying not two hours,
not the whole adventure.
No, I was thinking I was saying 2 to 6 sessions. Yeah. Yeah, probably 2 to 4 sessions. It depends on how long the sessions are for your group, and
with Starfinder being a new game, there might be some learning curve here, at least in the first adventure, figuring out. Oh, well, this is Starship Combat. Let's all take a break here. Maybe this will take us a whole session, even though maybe in a month or two time, you'll be able to go through Starship Combat way faster.
Because I mean, sort of related to that, and we have some seminars tomorrow talking about Starfinder in general. But while it's based on Pathfinder, there are a lot of little changes. So I would recommend trying to familiarize yourself, or if you think you know the Pathfinder rule, look it up in Starfinder to see if it still is the same rule in there. And then I think that'll help get people sort of shifting their brains a little bit for this is how it works in Starfinder. And obviously, the more you do that, the more you'll be able to react.
The disappearance of Valerian, will that ever be solved, or is that going to be like Aridin's death?
That's going to be like Aridin's death, yeah. What we are doing, what is kind of a theme that we want to have is the gap is not necessarily the exact same amount of time everywhere. It kind of went all over the multiverse, but on one planet, it might have ended a week earlier than on another planet. And so the Starfinder Society is kind of interested in sort of nibbling away at the edges of the gap and finding, well, what can we learn about that? And that's kind of what the big mystery is trying to get more knowledge, but we'll probably never, ever say what happened. Because really, we want to keep Galarian and Pathfinder separate from Starfinder so that people can play both and enjoy both.
In your minds, what happened to Galarian?
Well, we have. We're not going to. My mind could be one thing. His mind could be another thing.
I'm just curious, just to sort of.
Yeah, I can't answer that.
Okay.
It fell asleep. That's all I'm going to say.
Rip Van Winkling.
Yeah.
How are you guys keeping track of like ideas for new Starfinder APs, or will you not even worry about it until the first one's almost
wrapped up? Well, we have to. I mean, we do things months in advance, just with the production schedules. So we are starting to. It's also a little weird because we're used to doing two APs a year with Pathfinder, and now with just doing one this year, we've had a little more time, but we are starting to think about the next adventure path and how we want to change that. We've already got a thread on our message boards where people are already, fans are already throwing out their ideas for what they want, and spoiler, or not spoiler, but we do look at those threads, both for Pathfinder and Starfinder, because if we have a whole bunch of people on our message board saying, do this, do this, do this, it's okay. I mean, we still want to do it, too. We usually just keep lists of ideas, but I'm keeping an eye on that thread and on the message boards, too.
When each of you guys were offering your own section of the AP, what would you say some of your greatest sources of inspiration from fiction and cinema were when penning this? I mean, or for the field, the entire Dead Sons AP, what would you say was your own most?
Well, yours was first, but
mine was first. Wow, what was?
Well, okay, so we can sort of go with the general, and I can't necessarily because you were the one who outlined the whole adventure path. But basically, you know, you're out to stop an alien super weapon, and we've all heard that story before. Like that's a pretty, not that it's saying it's cliche or anything, but it is a sort of it is something we've seen, right? You know, you've got your something stars and your death somethings, and so that sort of definitely something we wanted to, and that's big in space opera, and it was definitely something that we wanted to tap into, like kind of right off, so just to get it out there right away. But for the first adventure path,
I mean, since it all takes place on Absalom Station, I would say Babylon 5 was probably. I mean, Babylon 5 was a big influence on me, anyways. But trying to, you know, have a whole big thing on the space station with there's law, but there's also not law and ambassadors. A lot of the politics that's involved around there was probably inspired by Babylon 5. I think a lot of my stuff also has been inspired by The Expanse. That's kind of it's the books and the show, but particularly the books I'm in love with, and they can't make them fast enough for me. So if I can get any small iota of Expanse flavor, I would be super happy. And like he said, I mean, Star Wars, because it's Star Wars. I also one of the... I'm sorry.
I was going to say, the very first combat takes place in Docking Bay 94. Which may or may not be a reference to something.
For those of you that aren't up on, does anybody know what the reference of Docking Bay 94? It's pretty obscure,
nods.
But it's
I saw some nods in there.
What?
I saw some nods out here. People know. Well, you can tell them.
It's where the docking bay where the Millennium Falcon is parked on in Mos Eisley. So you know, it's just the very first encounter takes place in Docking Bay 94.
We're not above that kind of really subtle reference.
Yeah, and another goal we had, too, was because this is the first adventure path, we kind of, besides just our inspirations, we wanted to kind of show off both the game and the setting. So that's why the first half, you're going to various places within the Pact Worlds, because that's kind of staying within the core setting. And then as the adventure path progresses, you go out into the vast and to see more of some of these other things. We wanted to see some of our big, both the Cult of the Devourer and the Corpse Fleet are mentioned in the core rulebook as major factions. So we kind of wanted to highlight some of this stuff and kind of give, in this first adventure path, a broad overview. Starship combat's a big thing, so that's why we give you a starship and have starship combats. You know, it's kind of want to say this is the kind of the core Starfinder adventure experience, hopefully, in this adventure path.
And number four is kind of like a post-apocalyptic kind of setting. I mean, it's sort of like not a big, you know, explosion. It's sort of like it was a gradual apocalypse where they just sort of lost contact with their main civilization, and then they just kind of batteries started to run out and food started to run out. So I read, you know, took from a lot of post-apocalyptic fiction, and in a weird way, I sort of like would think about like one of my favorite things in like Fallout is where that city where they worship the unexploded nuke, right? So it's just sort of like, how after you've lost everything, what do you, and lost all sort of cultural bookmarks, what do you think of things? What do things look like to an outsider? So you're like, okay, this hospital, right? What is it? What would someone who doesn't know what a hospital is? Oh, that's where you, but maybe stories were passed down. Well, this is a place of healing. So it becomes like, you know, a temple or whatever. But then, you know, what are other things like? I had a whole lot of fun writing the article about the city in general, just sort of picking out places like, this is the Field of Honor. It's clearly just an indoor sports stadium. Like, just taking things that, like, we would all recognize and kind of giving them a little twist. I'm going to pull something really obscure. So it's like Fallout, stuff like that, Mad Max, kind of stuff like that. And then an old video game called Superhero League of Hoboken, which was basically sort of takes place in the alternate future in Hoboken. It's sort of like you go to this one temple and it's like, oh, you have to do it. And it's clearly just they worship the Wheel of Fortune television show there. And it's bonkers and goofy. But the adventure isn't goofy. It's good fun.
And you can win fabulous fun and prizes.
And you can win fabulous prizes.
Any more questions? No one? We have like the...
So, like, with... You're talking about the drift, taking, like, felt like it takes 5D4 to 8 or 5D6 to 8. And then the first adventure taking place on an abandoned ship. Is there that kind of, like, deep space horror involved at all? Like, what happened to the ship? What ate them? What...
It certainly can happen. I mean, we kind of did Starfinder to be able to tell sort of any science fiction or science fantasy story that you might want to. There is a little bit of that in the first, because it is a ship that appeared without a crew, and the whole point is the PC's going to find out, and there's things on the ship, you know. So it's it could be played as a very straightforward, just like, let's go kill the monster, but a GM could also really turn it into a really spookiness. It's sort of meant to be that way.
At least
in the first one.
And I know that Amanda was pretty inspired by the video game Dead Space for her stuff, so there's some creepy, gross horror
in number three. Yeah. Any more? Anything? Yeah.
Sure. So since you have the Gazetteer on Absalom Station for the first one, I mean, does Absalom Station still have like all the recognizable components of Absalom?
No, it does not have it. But it has some things that call back. For instance, there is a Puddles District in Absalom Station, which I think is like where the sewers drain or something. You know, it's, so there's a few little callbacks to it, but it's not like it's not just. And the Starstone is in the center of Absalom Station. I think we've said that. So there are some things, but it's not like just the city got moved up there.
Okay.
But there's also some mystery because Absalom Station was created during the Gap.
Yeah.
And so after the Gap, it's like, oh, we're all living on this station. So they don't, so they can, and prior to the Gap, you still have history. So there's like Pathfinder history. So they might very well know there was a city called Absalom on Galarian. This is Absalom Station. There are some connections, but no one knows exactly what the connections are because that's all part of the Gap.
Right. Okay. Yep. Characters wake up.
So the Gap is actually 300 years ago. That's kind of like the core mystery of the setting, but it's 317 AG after Gap. So most, you could play an elf because, although not one of the core races, it's still the same universe. You could play an elf who was born during the Gap and has those memories. And the way we've explained it is, you've lost your memories of sort of.
So like,
but
like
you can explain it better.
I hope so. It's you sort of lose the memory of like the detail, like the very fine details. But I think if you were alive during that period where you just sort of look, but you know how to go out and go, oh, I work with you, I think, you know, but
yeah,
I don't
but
know
you don't
your
know,
name,
right? Or so when exactly we met, or something. But you would still have all your skills and all.
Yeah.
It wasn't because otherwise it.
Society
you probably wouldn't
down.
Have a futuristic society. It would be a dark age of primitive. Who knows? That's
yeah.
You still know. They still know that a laser gun was a laser gun, for example.
Cool.
Any more?
Yeah.
Yep.
So the planet of Aeox sounds like that's an absolutely fascinating culture. You know, it's a planet of entirely undead creatures at this point in time. And then I'm sure that you guys go into great detail in the actual book, but that's a while off. I'm sure we're all excited now. Can you tell us a little bit more about how culture functions on AX? I mean, when you think of undead, I mean, they can't reproduce, most of them, at this point in time. How do they keep their cycle going? Have they been doing this for centuries? Is it organized kind of by tier? Like, we all know that vampires are could be centuries old and typically some of the most powerful undead, whereas zombies would be made, like, 3 days ago, and some of the weakest tiers doesn't function like that. I mean, I'm particularly interested in hearing a little bit more. If you guys have anything to share.
Yeah, so what we've got, when the catastrophe happened millennia ago, the sort of big necromancers became the bone sages, and they were sort of in charge, and they were like, okay, we're going to turn you all into undead, and this is the rule, and we're going to be in charge. So these guys who might still, some of them changed, but some of them were probably even from back then still living now. So they're basically in charge. They're the rulers of that. And some of them may have defected with the corpse fleet, and some of them were some infighting during that sort of split, and I think we have an area there where it's basically a big undead prison. But essentially, it is very caste-like, I would say. You've got the Bone Sages, and then you've got sort of slightly more less powerful undead, and then sort of the grunt undead, your ghouls and your zombies and whatnot, who sort of make up the mass of everything. And while it is a planet of mostly undead, there are a couple places that the atmosphere is more thin, and it's kind of poisonous, but there are some places that where Eox is sort of created breathable atmosphere to be sort of friendly to visitors. Hey, you want to get into one of these necrographs, say, for instance, right? Well, you got to come to Eox to do it. So here's this space where you can live and breathe and survive while we put a ghoul's liver in you. So there are bits in there. And then there's also this area called the Halls of the Living, which is essentially sort of like a big complex / reality show, televised blood sports games and all everything you can think of that, where it is in charge, undead are in charge of it, but basically the participants who are voluntarily participating for big prizes. Again, we come back to big prizes. In these sort of sometimes death sports, just maybe sometimes just sort of straight up weird reality shows. We have a lot. We haven't defined all of it. We just sort of gave a general overview. And I guess you want to. Sorry, you keep seeing like you look at me. There's like I mean,
I
of course,
say something too,
of course, you know, there are necromancers who can make no undead. And I think there's certain ways that they might produce themselves. Like if you can't afford to buy it, this is just one way. If you can't afford to buy a necrograph, maybe you sign a contract that says when after you're fully dead, we get your body, and then they raise it and turn it into a new undead. So there's like a lot of legal wrangling. At least Sutter did it anyway. We wanted to make Eox kind of the Cheliax of Starfinder. So it's like they're all it's all above board and all very quote unquote legal, but it's also not something people really want to deal with. You have to when you have to, and then if an Eoxian is like, hey, sign this contract, you don't go, yeah, I'll just sign it without reading it, sure.
But we've also talked about that there are people from other worlds have come there perhaps looking for immortality through undeath, and so if they have the money to pay for it, they can go and get converted into some kind of undead on there. And, we haven't, since we're brand new, we haven't delved too much into detail. We've kind of just kind of thrown it out there, and GMs can play around with that a little bit.
For those people who are like very, very sick and just they're desperate to just not die, not fully die, so they might go to Eox to do that sort of thing.
Given that they are members of the pack, are there plans at some point to make player races or player character?
Yes.
Possibly? Yes, there are.
Yes.
There are plans. There are not plans.
And we also in number three, we actually have the native race of Eox are called Alibrians. And
the native living race back before the cataclysm.
They're still Alibrians, even if they're undead. But in number three, we also give stats for living Alibrians, because there are a few living natives of the planet, and they have player race stats too. So if a player wants to play a living native of Eox and the GM allows it, they will be able to do that after number three comes out. So we'll have both undead and living Alibrians, although the undead far, far, far outnumber the living on Eox, certainly. Mm-hmm. We have time for maybe one or two more questions.
I know there's been some contention with how creating undead functions and the alignment system and all that. Will book three kind of go into a little bit more about those setting details in Starfinder versus Pathfinder?
We don't go into that because we're primarily doing the setting information for Eox and just some rules. I mean, most of those are in the core rulebook because The evil descriptor does not appear on the vast majority of spells, and so that's kind of, we didn't want to hard code it in as much, because if you have a planet of undead that is part of a larger group, it's hard to get, like, if they're always bad, then you can't tell interesting stories with them. And that can be, I think that's kind of a change, because in Pathfinder people are used to undead equal bad all the time. And this is kind of like, well, in the real world, you can't always say that someone is bad all the time. Or, you know, and sometimes you can, but, and it's hard. And it's, these are things, I mean, you know, this is how we're setting up the core setting. If people are not comfortable with that or want to do it, you know, in your game, you can change things however you want. We just assume that this is because that's going to allow us to tell more interesting stories.
I sort of like to think of it, liken it towards the Klingons in the original series. They were kind of always bad. They were always the antagonists. But then in, like, the Next Generation, oh my God, we've got an alliance with them, and, you know, we get to see they have more of a rich culture than we may have thought when they were just the bad guys.
Yeah. And I think that's it, because we have to get the next panel in here and set up. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you.